Team, yeah. All right. So shall we start? All right. I'm Susan Abraham, in case any of you don't know, but I think most of us have met. Maybe a few of us are new today. So we're going to take a little bit of a trip. We've been starting down the walk here, but we're going to go this way around the tennis court and then over to the meadow. And then we'll take a quick trip to the water, see what the fishermen, if they caught anything. Then we'll come back up. And if we can, I haven't looked over here, but maybe we'll hike up the trail we're going to make over the pond view. And if everyone, if you have good boots or you're just careful, we can just skip across. It might get a little muddy, but I'll check where the best crossing is. If not, you can go back up and around. But just so we can kind of catch that view, because we've been looking at the flags. But now, you know, it's dry enough to do that, I think. Okay, so let's go stand over here. We're going to take the view of the bioswale that we usually don't look at, but let's take a look at that. Okay, so if we stand over here, you can see, you can get another view of the swale and, you know, its serpentine form here. Part of that, you know, I think this form is quite lovely, but part of the reason of doing that, right, Mother Nature does that because water's finding its opportunity, so it might hit some geological formation, rocks, and then go the other way, you know, ping pong along. So it's just, doing this is just sort of helping that natural form. One of the things that happened here, though, is we sort of have a break in this very slight slope towards the river. And so there's a lot of standing water here, and this is why this looks like this. If we could, it'd be great if we could take up this whole area, you know, and just change the topography slightly. It doesn't take much to send it this way. But we really have encroached a little bit beyond your park property proper. So unless we have permission, we won't do that. But that's why this looks like this. By next month, we'll have it all mulched up and looking a little fresher. You know, permission and money goes a long way. No, I don't think they'd mind either. Yeah, right. So we could talk about that because you can see everyone here. See how it's greener, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right where Richard's standing. That's a very slight, I mean, the slightest rise, right? Mm-hmm. That's all it takes is a slight rise, and then you can push the slope out. So that's something to think about. Some of these plants look a little ragged, but they're just starting to come back up. This guy has some nice new growth. This one barely. So I'm probably going to cut off the major trunk here. These are pussy willows. Our common pussy willows, and they'll turn into very large shrubs. We just need them to get, you know, really established. So I may actually replace some of these this year. And then you get a different view of the hillside, what's happening here, and how many trees are coming up. And we'll take a little look at the buds again when we come around, but that's what we did last time, so we'll just look there. But before we get over to the meadow, which is, you know, just mostly dormant. There's some things growing on the ground later now. But I want to talk a little bit about birds and bird migration and what we will be seeing now in earnest. Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. Could you introduce yourself for those of us who don't know who
you
are? And...
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, I'll start out with the introduction.
Okay.
This is Susan Abraham, who we've hired to work on this. To understand her, like they had the
Piedmont Environmental Council had a presentation. She's the featured speaker at that conference, and she basically does here in what, Willisford?
Willisford's been a client. Mm-hmm.
So they're basically a naturalist, native plant person, landscape designer, and she's designed all the different items we put in here. We've gotten grants to these, put these in. This one we got $10,000 from the county, and Meadowscape we got $5,000, or $3,000 from the county to do that. And she's basically led the design. We planted plants all along the water over there, too, that were planted with the schools. And that was, we got a $2,000 grant. And she lined up all the plants and found all the native plants for us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. So basically, my practice is conservation landscape design. And this is one of my favorite projects that we're working on right now. If you see my car, I got out of this very, very dusty, muddy. It's because I was down a country road yesterday doing our first meadow burn. So, and this afternoon I'll go back out there and we'll do our next level in a farm out in Lovettsville. And that hopefully will happen one day here, which will be great fun. But one of the things we're going to start seeing now is as the plants are coming out and the change in temperature, right, and we move into spring, is that we're going to move into really heavy-duty migration of so many different fauna, so many different animals, and of course our birds. And the group I want to talk about a little bit today, which is, you know, one of the big charismatic groups, are warblers. Does anybody have any idea in North America how many warblers we have migrating up through our country? So there's, the estimate is 53, just of warblers of that species. And warblers are small birds. They're about 4 1/4 to 5 3/4 inches. So they're small little guys, right? But they're the ones we really listen for. Anybody have an idea or a guess? How about a guess on how many warbler species migrate through what we call the Atlantic Flyway, which we're part of? Any idea? 48. So we have 53. How many?
48.
48. Close on each side. So we have about 34. Which is the majority, right? That's the majority of 53 species. Big number. So we're the Atlantic Flyway in our region where we actually live. It's called IBA, the International Bird Agency. We live in the central Piedmont, which is a very rich area. And so many birds come through here. So as you see, we get a big number of warblers. So we should be looking for those guys when you're out and about, when the meadow's going to be cut down here in the next month, then they'll be in there. You know, as they're coming through, they're going to be hunting insects. So you'll see a lot of them in here. And as the plants get higher, they'll go for the flying insects. Right? Right now, they're going to go for the hatching, the crawling, the low insects. When those guys get to their next level as the plants come up, then they'll be hunting those guys. And then we have some resident warblers. I'm not a bird expert. Do we have any here? All right, we'll get a birder out here next time. So we really can get some of that. But let me give you just a little idea of some of the names, because I find this in both birds and plants, just how entertaining these names are. We have a blue-winged warbler, we have a black pole warbler, a cerulean warbler, an orange crown warbler, Tennessee warbler. Not all of these will come through here, but many of them will. The American redstart. How about the worm-eating warbler? What do they do, right? Our favorite oven bird, they usually stay in the woods, but they're around. A magnolia warbler. Why would that be important? Magnolias? Our Cape May warbler, our yellow warbler. We have our yellow rump warbler. Okay. Our black-throated green warbler. Our yellow-throated warbler. Our palm warbler. Our prairie warbler. Wilson's warbler. I know, he got so lucky to have that named after him. Our morning warbler, and then we have a whole host of thrushes, like our wood thrush. We have a water thrush. That might be near here, maybe further east. So you can go through this list, and I'm in our next posting, when I write up something, I'll put a couple of links for this if you want to share this with schools or with, you know, your family. It's a pretty rich area in what's going to happen here over time. And as these environments, as we grow, build them and grow them, it'll only become richer and richer in species, which is really, I think, a lot of fun. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about our plants over in this meadow. So we'll walk over there. There's not a lot of change yet, but we'll probably start to see a few things poking up. Any questions on the on our biosoil? You can see there are a lot of plants here. These are, I think these are horsetails here, the large green ones. And we really actually concentrated on planting those towards the sign. And they've already migrated up. Look how quickly in two seasons how they're coming up. So these guys, by next year, they'll probably be up through here. And you can see they really like being near the water course. And we have some other small plants starting to come up. I'll just walk over here. This little green plant here, you'll see this will cover a whole huge area. And this is called, I want to say golden sorrel, but it's actually... It's out of my mind at the moment, but it will just be covered in yellow flowers, and this will go all along the berm on both sides. And those are just starting to come up here. And you can see there's a few little things poking up. We'll come in and mow down a lot of this and cut back a lot. We'll mulch up a little bit, clean it up a little, and then the plants will just start coming up. You can see some of the sedges are coming up. So tomorrow will be, I feel like tomorrow will be our first true spring rain. Which, you know, will be spring officially, right? So then this will really start to change. And this year, it's going to be abundant. Even though last year was very nice, I think this year we're going to really see its true character. Okay? Any questions on that? All right, well, let's hike over to the meadow and take a look over there.
Okay, Frank, we're going to have to get a real birder here next time.
An hour and a half of Bill Coor.
With plants?
Wildflowers.
All right, we need to get him out here. I need to invite Bill out here.
He's really good.
He is good. He's great.
Yeah.
He's great.
And he knows his stuff.
Yeah, he does.
Birds, let's see who. Do you have somebody in mind?
I don't know.
Oh.
Maybe I can get one of the Garveys or somebody.
I have a question about the birds in general. I know you don't know your field, but, I mean, should I still keep feeding?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me talk. That's a great question. Yeah. Let me talk about that.
Something else I read which is very impressed me is that I guess there's a sort of a sparrow that is...
Yeah.
But it seems like that's all I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, and there's ways of not letting them, but, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm just curious about that.
Yeah.
Because it's really too bad if we're not feeding, you know, the ones that we
right. Want
to be feeding.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know.
And that might be a little change in habitat, like a little bit of change in plant material nearby. Uh-huh. So you're creating, attracting some different insects.
I'd like to talk to you separately about coming over and possibly taking some time to give me a landscape. Plan or, you know, somehow.
Yeah, let's talk about
that. I'd like to
do
that. Yeah.
I have some cards in my car,
okay,
I'm sure.
Good. I was a good friend of Catherine Daniels.
Oh, yeah.
So,
she went back to Texas, right?
She sure did.
Yeah.
And then she had all kinds of problems with
her.
Good,
how are you?
I guess she had incredible surgery.
Oh, my
arm and her shoulder. Oh, yeah. Like,
was she in an accident?
Big stuff. No, they just realized one thing after another, and so.
Wow.
But did you, I don't know if she told you, but, you know, her backyard had been beautiful, full of the...
Yes,
you
know, yes.
And the HOA made her cut it all down because it's called weeds.
Yeah, that's the battle.
I know.
That's why
I
it's great to have so many folks out here being advocates of change, you know. Okay. Well, this is looking pretty minor. Not much is happening here. But you can see there's some, you know, there's some winter weeds in here. You know, they're low. They're not going to take much. They're not going to take up much once it starts going. Let me see if I can see some yarrow. You can walk in here. Nothing's going to bother you right now. We've got some wild onion in here, which is great. I didn't plant that, but it's good to see it. And...
So what is that bright, strong green underneath?
This could be a little clover, a little type of clover.
In my lawn, it's a weed. Everything's a weed.
Yeah, everything's a weed. I'm looking for yarrow. look for some feathery, like some feathery plant. Let's see if we can find some yarrow here. Let's see.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, no, this one.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yep, there it is. See it?
Is that it?
Yeah, here it is. Here. So you can see it right here.
Ah.
See this little guy?
Pretty.
Yeah, isn't it pretty?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's called yarrow. Achillea millennium.
So that, and it
said, and why do we care?
Well, this is a really important native plant. So it's one of the first ones that's going to come up. Has very basic white flat-topped flowers, but it will cover this whole. It'll be a ground cover. So over time, it'll help start suppressing some of the things we don't particularly want. But that there's a lot of that in here, and it's just a powerhouse pollinator plant. So it looks, if you feel it, it feels very, very soft, right? But this thing will get big, big root systems. And that's what we want. That's what we're looking for. I'm not so concerned about what's above, although we have an abundant year last year of plants. I was really taken by that. But what we really want, we'll keep this cut this year. You know, we'll let it get, I don't know, maybe 12 inches high or so through the season. When the heat hits in July, we'll let it go. Because then we've cut most of the seed heads off of the things we don't want. And then we're going to let, you know, in the heat, that's when our native plants are going to thrive. But what we're also doing is we're just not letting that top growth come up and forcing those roots out. Because we want, some of these plants will go 15 feet down or more. Once we do that and have that, then that means all of that biological life will happen underneath, which has been suppressed by, which we all do, right, by turf. Yeah. It's kind of a desert in a way, and we're suppressing microbial life, and that's what we want under here. Then, when those root structures are in here, that can sort of outcompete anything that comes in. It won't outcompete the woodies. That's why we will burn it over time, and we'll have to spot treat it, because there's a lot of what we call invasive pressure around us. And that's true everywhere. You know, we sort of created that. So we have to manage it. I think a lot of folks think, oh, meadow, great, we'll just mow it, occasionally burn it. That's not so, because we live in a very dynamic place. Everything wants to grow in Virginia, including the exotics. And we've sort of upended the cycle. So we really have to participate in trying to keep that cycle balanced. We can't just let it go. It will turn into like autumn olive field. That's what would happen here. And we don't want to see that. So that's why this year we'll have suppression by mowing, or we call it competition, by selective mowing. Then we'll let it go. Then we'll do that again maybe next year. And then we'll be setting up how to burn. And we'll have to work with the county and the fire department on that, which will be fun. And hopefully we'll have a burn, and, you know, everyone can come out and see it burn in 5 minutes. Maybe 15. It'll go fast.
Don't miss it.
Yeah, don't miss it.
So but it was last year, the end of the first year of this?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I already saw a decent amount of, like, butterfly activity last year. So that was quick.
Yes. I have never seen a meadow perform like this before. And I think it's because we've got so much water. And I think it just, you know, it just bloomed like crazy. There were monarch butterflies all over this thing. I've never seen that the first year of a meadow, unless I plugged in like a ton of plants. I put some plugs in here, but not that many, not enough to do that. So I'm looking forward to another really amazing year. And there were a lot of birds in here, a lot of birds, because they're hunting the insects. So you'll see them swoop in. And of course, before this meadow, they weren't doing that. They were over by the edges here. But it wasn't as dynamic as what happened here. And for myself, it was really quite fun to be working over in the woodland and look across and just see these flocks of birds, right? And then they come the next way, and then they're gone. They just took all those insects off. And then another species would come in. The other thing, I think we might have talked about it before, but is the raptors. Of course, we see the bald eagles here around, which will be great. But you'll start to see more of some of the smaller species eventually hunting in here, because we're going to have voles. Now, don't get scared. They're teeny tiny. They're little guys. They're really important because one of the things they do is they disturb the soil. They come in and out, so seeds can get in and out. That's really important. And then the other thing is they provide food for the raptors. And then the raptors are coming in, and if we get any other kind of animals in here, they'll take them. So they kind of start that balance, you know, that cycle of life, which is really, to me, fascinating. So we've got something like 7 or 8 different grass species in here. And then I have this huge, right, this huge list of plants, and that's just the first page. Second page is down below, of all the flowering species. We had about 4 or 5 that really were present. Over time, some of those will wane, and others will come and become more dominant. So the grasses were here, but they're not dominant yet. Usually it takes a couple of years before the grasses start to make a presence, and then you see the structure of the grass. And then things like the goldenrods will start to come in next year. Those will start to be more dominant. And it'll take another year or so. We'll see some of the monarch butterflies host on? Milkweed. We have 3 or 4 different species. Yeah. Those will start to become more dominant. And then some of the other plants will, wane a bit. They'll still be present. And then, 3-5 years from now, if you come out here on a, every month or every week, you'll start to watch the plants migrate. They won't just stay where I put them. They'll start to find their niches where they want to be. And so you might have a big flush of one plant over here, and it trickles out in the next week or two when, like, the false indigo, the wild blue indigo comes up. That'll be a big group that trickles out and maybe pops up over here. And then it'll decide, where the seeds are hit and the soil conditions right, it'll be more dominant elsewhere. I find that quite
fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Dynamic meadows can be very dynamic areas. What we don't want is 1 or 2 or 3 species to take over. And so I was careful not to put species in here that would do that. A plant that grows naturally in a floodplain here, a grass plant, is called Indian grass. Does anyone know Indian grass? Come to my house in a few months. I'm going to burn it down this weekend, and you will see it. It's absolutely glorious. It can get to about 5-6 feet tall. And it's called Indian grass because the seed heads look like candy corn. It's orange and yellow, and then it goes to gold flax. Beautiful in the fall light in the afternoon. It just takes your breath away. However, if you plant that plant in here in 5 years, you will have an Indian grass meadow, and that's it. And that might be okay in some areas, where you're really trying to do reclamation, or you have huge areas that you don't have much, you don't have a budget to try and maintain. Also, maybe not appropriate in a community where we have a lot of eyeballs on this thing, right? And they're looking for a payoff, like beauty and diversity. So I don't think that's really would be appropriate here either. So we won't add that plant. And if I see that migrate in, we'll take it out. So we'll be watching plants that do that. We put some trails in here, so we're hopeful. And we have some stakes. Those stakes are really for the mowers. Until this becomes really kind of thatch-like and we absolutely know where the boundaries are. I love the guys who mow, but they like straight lines. So I've watched many a place get cut off, over time, a little bit. We don't want that. So we'll keep some of these stakes up until, there goes someone right there. There we go. Is it a robin? Yeah. Oh, here we go. Another. Here we go. Yeah. So when we come in, we don't have a lot to mow here. You can see it's been blown down. We're gonna rake it up. I want some of this out of here. So we'll rake up this a little bit. I have some seed where I'll see some patchy areas. We'll put down some more seed, and we'll just take a look at that, okay? And what we'll do with this stuff, we'll cut this all up, chop it all up, and then we're gonna take it to the woodland, and we're gonna use it for some mulch areas.
So with my regular landscaper,
yeah, okay. Yeah, he just has to stay.
I was going out in here, but...
Yeah, yeah. And if they can try not... Last year there was some, just some drift onto the woodland and it killed some. So if they can just be careful with that.
Actually, yeah. We asked him. You don't have to, but this is probably weedier than anything else.
Is it?
I
smell it.
We could
stay
away
from
here.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm. To the weeds,
yeah. Look at all the seeds in there. All those seeds.
Nice.
Right?
I'd love it if we could stand in it.
Violet.
What are the little white flowers?
Oh, that's a type of clover, I think.
It's a
down
clover.
There. Yeah.
And like a bluish.
Yeah, this is. Yeah, this is the guy we're going to want to control. If you touch that, you won't like it.
Oh, then I won't.
Yeah, so this is a, what is that?
Called?
Yeah, it's invasive. It's probably a bull thistle. This is like a thistle. So if you touch this, it's like, ooh. Okay. So we'll come and, you know, we'll spot treat that. That looks like a penstemon maybe that's starting to come up. So if you walk through here, you'll start to see a few things. Not much yet. I would think after this rain, we're going to start to see some stuff. So we're just going to come through and cut this. We're going to rake some of this up a little bit. And then we'll come through again. Let's see, that's April. In May, we'll come again. It'll flush, and then we'll cut this again. And then we'll do it again in April, May, maybe again in June. We'll watch it. And then as soon as the heat hits in July, we'll let it go. So I put a budget in there, right, as if this thing was completely filled and it's going to take us, you know, some men. And to cut this down is going to take, that's not going to take very long. So that's kind of cool because we have a budget and I can just say, okay, great. We didn't use that all up. If something else in this budget is more troubling, we'll be able to put the money on that. So we'll just be balancing it like that. If it all goes really well, you'll have money in your budget at the end of the month, at the end of the year. But we'll see how that goes. Because we're going to start on that swale across the way and we're going to start taking out the invasives. Cleaning some stuff out for structure, and then we'll start to add plants to that. And that's going to be, I think, a really beautiful area. But it's tricky in there. You know, there's a lot of stuff. Those invasives can be really challenging in a spot like that, you know, with water.
And it's probably never been tended to.
Right, exactly. So we'll, you know, so some of these funds, if that's a little more difficult than what I budgeted, these funds will flip over there and that's the point, is to try and stay within that and not be surprised too much. So, any questions? I would just say, you know, once it's cut, we get that first couple of rains, you know, mid-April, this is going to be growing like crazy. So just come out and check things out. You know, and I'll be out here again, and we'll have real things to look at. You know, we'll have some real things. And if I have time, my goal, you know, all these plants, is this to do a little, like, flashcard or something with all the plants? Maybe we can print something that out, and I'll put, like, I want to put their, like, their basal leaves, you know, their early leaves, and try to ID them. Because usually we just go to the flowers, but here we have to wait a while before we get the flowers. So let's see if we can do that. Like, how many people will remember the yarrow? Should we look at it again? Looks like fern. Looks like a fern. So you'll see that start to flush up.
What did you say these little white flowers were?
This is probably just I have a clover in here. So this looks like a low growing clover down in here, which is great. A clover fixes nitrogen. And there are other things, plants in here. We had a nice, not a lot, but a nice group of partridge pea. We also have Maryland pea in here. And pea plants, you know, those are nitrogen fixers. So they go into the soil and they attract nitrogen and fix it so the other plants can take advantage of it. So that's why we put those in there. We don't want to change the fertility on this. You know, there's no mulch. There's no fertilizers in here and there won't be because we sort of want a pour. When you do a meadow or a prairie, you want like a pour soil because the plants that go in there, their niche is to be competitive in a poor soil environment. If you make this rich, they will, you know, they'll decline very quickly. And then who loves a rich soil? Weeds. Yeah. True weeds, you know, and exotic plants. Plants from Asia or, you know, some other continent. So that's why we don't do that. And that was one of those things, you know, meadows and prairies are pretty young art
in science, pretty young. A lot of it's been learned by, you know, mistakes, like don't put Indian grass in your meadow. Yeah, myself and everyone else who's working on that thought that was a great idea. Now everybody knows that. But, you know, right, you have to learn those things. But there's some great experts out there that I try to, you know, every year. I'll be next week at a workshop over this, just learning what's the latest thing, you know, so I can try to avoid those mistakes so I can learn about them. But what's the latest thing? And really, to manage something this size, right, we're not going to treat this like a garden. But if you treat it like a competitive environment and you try to put in competition, which is called cutting, then you can manage a site like this with something as simple as cutting. And that's what we're going to try to do. And then when we get to burning, you know, we'll have a party that day. It'll be fun. And that'll be really fun to do. And it'll go fast. A site like this goes real fast. And, of course, that's a fun thing to do, and hopefully that'll bring more folks out here, you know, to advocate for the space. Any questions on the meadow? Yeah.
With the golf course being so close, mm-hmm. are you concerned about the fertilizer runoff and all the stuff, the chemicals they use to keep them green?
A little bit. We have this buffer here between us, yes. So that'll serve some of that, yeah. And then we have this grass, another grass buffer. So I'm not too concerned because there's some runoff, but we have a buffer. So that's a good thing. Also, meadows, strip meadows and things like that are often used to do what you're talking about, to serve as a filter for that kind of thing. And more and more golf courses are actually trying to do this. Because, you know, the Chesapeake Bay is in trouble from the runoff of agricultural lands and golf courses. So if you put a strip like this around your waterways, first of all, you're going to cut down the geese because they don't like this. And second of all, you'll be filtering this. That's a way to try to mitigate that problem. So that's a good question.
Can you tell us about birds feeding the birds? Remember I asked you, should we still be feeding them?
Oh, right. So it's sort of a myth to think we only feed our birds in the, you know, from the feeders in the winter. You need to feed them all year long. All year long. And the reason is because we have stripped their habitat so desperately. Now, there's controversy in that. I'll say that, and another ecologist will say something else. Isn't that amazing? Controversy in ecology. Just love that. But so some folks think, oh, then you're training them, blah, blah, blah. From my point of view is I'm looking around. Where, you know, where's their habitat? It's gone. So I think that's incumbent upon us to feed them. And then the other thing is those are the adults who are feeding. So they're out hunting all day. If they can come over and get a little quick protein, right? But what they're doing, right, they're going to come in. They're going to start migrating now. And the residents, those folks who stay around and nest, they're not feeding those seeds to their nestlings. They're feeding the insects. So they're really busy. There are studies that sometimes one adult bird, you know, the male and female in here, they might go and hunt 300 times to get the weight on that bird. So an environment like this is fabulous because first we're going to disturb this a little. They're going to come and get the ground insects and all of the insects that have been overwintering. They'll be disturbed a bit. So they'll come in and hunt that. You'll see that right after we're here. Come out. They'll be out. Then we'll get the next level coming up, and all of the insects are coming and pupating and doing what they do. They'll grab all those guys. And then the adults will come up, and they'll come through and grab those. So the more insects we have, the better. You know, that's the opposite of our chemical companies, right? Really, that whole thing about chemicals really started from agriculture, right? Trying to be competitive in agriculture. It has nothing to do with what we're doing. More insects, more competition. That's what you want in a system like this. So we're the opposite of that. So you'll come and see them when they're in here hunting. You know, they're very specific what they're trying to get. They're trying to get those big, juicy, fat caterpillars, right? And bring them home. If they're not doing that, and I have a whole lecture on exotic plants and their berries and things that they're doing. When you look at those plants, you hear folks think, but the birds, they love, you know, autumn olive, and they love these other things. It's like, yeah, so what are you going to feed your kids? You're going to feed them a whole balanced meal, or you're going to go to McDonald's? It's like that. And I'm not just saying that because I'm trying to be funny. I'm saying there are tests, there's research of the lipids, the proteins, and all kinds of other stuff in those berries that are not available to our birds and our animals. They haven't evolved together. They can't crack the chemical mix. Where those plants are from, Russia, Asia, wherever, those animals, those birds, evolved there, and they know how to crack that chemical coat. It's the same with the leaves. The insects, when they come and defoliate our wild cherry, our black cherry, and people freak out, it's like, no, those trees have evolved to when once those animals have come through, those butterflies, you know, all of those, the moths and things, you'll see black cherries throughout another flush of leaves. That happens every year. That's an adaptation and a cycle that doesn't happen elsewhere. So they can, all those insects, the reason we have all these insects is they're feeding on the leaves. They can't do that as well on our exotic plants because the chemical structure is different. And if you want to learn more about that, I don't know, I'll put it in my, I brought books last time, so I'll put it in my next write-up, is Dr. Talamé's book. Shows excellent examples. He's a professor of entomology at Delaware, and he's the guy who's doing all of the research. He's not the only guy, but he's a big guy doing that research, and all his graduate students. So you can learn. It's an easy read. It's fun to read. Lots of resources online. He has a lot of stuff. But that's sort of that's like the key why we're doing this. I'm not doing this just because I like the plants. Because I understand the cycle, right? And the more diversity we have, the less problems we have on this planet. When we have that cycle going, and we're really, right, we're starting to come to terms with that. And you guys are in the forefront of that, so it's pretty exciting. Okay, shall we take a hike over here? Sure. Let's see if those fishermen caught anything, and then we'll take a quick look at the buds over here, and then let's hike up the rise, okay? And you can hike right through here, or you can walk around. If you see any other different plant, let me know. But we're pretty early. I don't see too much diversity coming up yet. You know, we're still a little early. We'll get this rain and a little warm weather, and then we'll just pop up.
Can't wait.
I know. It's going to be exciting.
There's like little miniature strawberries.
They're probably wild strawberries.
The native of this area?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, somebody's taking a walk.
Use the bag.
Yeah.
Are those strawberries edible?
They don't have much flavor, but the animals eat it. The rabbits and, somebody thinks they can just do that here. Rabbits and, squirrels and bulls, they'll all eat them. They're not very tasty to us. But that strawberry and our wild mountain strawberries, that's the root plant for all of our domestic.
Okay.
It's just like the blueberries up in Maine in that area. Yeah. That's the high bush blueberry and the low bush. Those are our root plants
for the industrial.
Yeah. We'll just stop at our beautiful sign here. Okay, so this is our interpretive sign that your community invested in. We're going to be putting a new one up by the woodland this season. And many of these plants are in here. So let's see what I saw come up this year. Not too much. I saw a little bit of goldenrod come up. And I'm sure the grasses are in there, but they're going to be very small this first 2 years. And I saw a little bit of the milkweed here. I didn't see any coneflower yet, but I expect to see these two this year. And then we might see some of these guys small. You know, they won't be very showy. But we'll see more of a show this year. Last year was mostly white flowers. You know, the eupatoriums came in really nicely, and the yarrow. But we'll start to see a little more variety in color this year, which will be fun and exciting.